from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
At the legislature today, the battle over the budget continues as lawmakers react to Governor Justice's symbolic state of emergency. In the House, education standards are still a top priority, but members may be forced to let the Senate take the lead on any major changes to the system. And 20 years ago, lawmakers set lofty goals for West Virginia to cut the amount of waste going into landfills. Did we meet them? Find out on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Governor Jim Justice says he or members of his staff will be in his, quote, war room every morning through the end of this legislative session, inviting lawmakers from both parties to join him to work on a budget. This morning was the first of those meetings, and while some lawmakers did attend, they were all members of the Democratic Party. Lawmakers have just 17 days left in this legislative session, according to a countdown clock outside the governor's office at the Capitol. Governor Jim Justice unveiled the clock earlier in the session as a way to pressure lawmakers to present a budget. And since, a Republican framework has been offered. That framework would cut Medicaid, public schools, and higher education funding by $50 million each to close a hole in the 2018 budget. Justice says those cuts would be devastating to the state, so now he's inviting lawmakers to meet with him or his staff each morning to negotiate a new budget plan. Six Democratic lawmakers attended the first of those meetings today, including Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso, who says discussion focused on the lack of a budget.
He is concerned we're not going to have one, and he wants us to get together every day and work together and try to get a budget together.
Justice has presented several budget proposals to lawmakers. The first came during his State of the State address, which was followed by a second budget proposal a few weeks later that lowered the rate of tax increases initially requested. Just last week, Justice sent House Speaker Tim Armstead and Senate President Mitch Carmichael a letter adjusting his introduced budget bill, essentially for the third time. Carmichael says with all of the changes, there's a lack of clarity in the governor's plan.
There isn't necessarily a plan as a thought process for the week. He continues to change it, and, that's his prerogative, but that's not helpful to the process.
But House Minority Leader Tim Miley says he believes the governor's general proposal to increase sales taxes and another tax on businesses, as well as a tax increase on the wealthiest West Virginians, is gaining popularity across the state.
Everyone seems to recognize that there is going to be pain felt by either deep and severe budgetary cuts or some minuscule tax increases upon the consumers of West Virginia. And so the question is, where do you feel the least amount of pain as a citizen of West Virginia? And if they recognize that the pain of these revenue measures are temporary and they will come off if and when our state rebounds economically, I would tend to think that most people would be supportive of the governor's proposals.
Miley says the taxes are temporary because Justice has said he'd sunset the increases and remove them when the state's economy begins to rebound. Miley points to previous tax cuts, like the removal of the grocery tax, as proof that Democrats will follow through with the proposal. Prezioso agrees. He says solving the current budget crisis will take some level of pain in the form of cuts to necessary services or tax increases to dig the state out. But he says lawmakers should be concerned with a lack of certainty in the public that's resulted from the ongoing negotiations.
When people are out there not knowing what to expect that we're going to do and the chances of us not having a budget at the end of this session, we should be more diligent in what we do to make things happen, to make it work, and to provide, the state a legitimate working budget that we don't hurt the people out there.
Republican legislative leaders maintain lawmakers are working on a budget bill, one that will be presented as early as Saturday in the House Finance Committee. Carmichael says while Justice is holding those morning meetings in the governor's office,
We're upstairs working. We've been here already for roughly 40 days. And, you know, when he got here at 9 o'clock, I'd already been here for an hour and a half. So we're working on this process, and we're doing it in a responsible budgeting manner.
Carmichael says he continues to be disappointed in the theatrics from the governor's office over the budget, but they don't surprise him. He says his office door is always open to the governor if he wants to work on a budget deal together. Governor Justice's lighting of the state of emergency lantern atop the Capitol Dome received immediate criticism yesterday from the Senate President and House Speaker in written statements. Justice says the lighting is symbolic, representing the emergency West Virginia will face in the healthcare arena should lawmakers move forward with their proposal to cut Medicaid funding by $50 million next year. The move also sparked responses from Republican members on the House and Senate floors today to freshman members of the chambers. Delegate Jordan Hill and Senator Mike Maroney shared their thoughts on the lantern lighting.
Today, our governor has reduced this capital, the people's capital, to nothing more than a political trinket, the latest prop in his sideshow of budget nonsense. He has sullied the good meaning behind that lantern for a cheap political ploy, and now he's using taxpayer property to try to bully us into raising taxes on those struggling citizens we represent. You said it yourself yesterday, Mr. Speaker. This is childish, immature, and it's not fitting of the solemn responsibilities with which the people have entrusted us. Now, I may be one of the youngest members of this legislature, but I'm not afraid to tell this governor it's time to grow up. As you said yesterday, Mr. Speaker, and I quote, "Bullying isn't leadership. Building consensus around the right plan for our state is leadership. The legislature will show that leadership, and we hope the governor will start doing so as well. We have people working around the clock on serious solutions for this budget problem, and we don't have time to play political games."
I feel that there's games being played, and that's not the way to go about it. Okay, you know, you learn the hard way how to act down here. I've gone through some of this on my own, and I personally want to call him out on it. I think it's he needs to be called out. The final straw was the lantern in the Capitol Dome. Okay, I didn't know even what that meant. I saw it on, I started talking to some people, and I found out what it meant. And to use that, I mean, the last time that was on, a couple dozen people died. Over 1,000 people lost their home. You know, probably tens of thousands of people were significantly affected. I mean, I don't know anybody that died or lost their home. I live in the Northern Panhandle, but to use that as a political ploy, to me, is extremely poor judgment and very insensitive. I think it crosses the line, and you know that's why I'm standing up. I would call for him to turn that lantern off today.
Both the House and Senate are once again considering bills this year to change the state's education standards. It's a reoccurring theme at the State House since Republican lawmakers took control of the legislature in 2015. In the Senate, lawmakers have approved a bill that does not replace the current college and career-ready standards taught in schools, but calls for a cyclical review with the input of West Virginia teachers. In the House, however, the discussion over potential changes is just beginning. Liz McCormick joins us with more.
The bill taken up in a House Education Subcommittee today would replace the state's current standards with math standards first used in California in 1997 and English standards from Massachusetts in 2001. Members of the subcommittee didn't make changes to those provisions today, but are recommending lawmakers give counties the flexibility to adjust state standards as they see fit.
Throughout the session, a House subcommittee focused on K-12 education has considered several bills that would impact the state's public schools. House Bill 2443 is one of them. The bill would repeal Common Core standards in West Virginia and replace them with standards from California and Massachusetts that are almost 20 years old. Common Core, however, was repealed by the West Virginia Board of Education in 2015 and replaced with a new set of standards that were the result of statewide public hearings on the issue. The five delegates delegates on the K-12 subcommittee had previously discussed allowing counties to take the state's current standards and make changes to them, which could potentially result in 55 different sets of education standards in West Virginia. All five members voiced a need for counties to have flexibility in the classroom, but there was some question over how much. Republican delegate Steve Westfall of Jackson County questioned Sarah Stewart from the State Department of Education about the impact of allowing counties to change just 5 or 10% of the state standards to address local education needs.
I do have a little bit of concern, and I'll express why. We are required to adhere to ESSA, the Every Student Succeeds Act, and under ESSA, it requires all states to have challenging academic standards, and those standards have to be in math, ELA, and science, and they have to be the same for all public schools in the state. So I think that there can be some, we can add 10% to the bare-bones standards that we establish at the state level. I think that would work. I do have concerns with changing the standards for different counties, just based on the language of ESSA.
Okay, so you're saying have a set of standards, but if you want to add to something that, so that every, we'd have a set of standards for all 55 counties, but if Wayne County wants to add a program for whatever, minor training or something, or Jackson County wants to have one for the Toyota plant, something that fills that need, then you could add to it instead of delete.
Absolutely.
Later during discussion, Westfall encouraged his fellow members to recommend to the full committee the importance of having a statewide set of standards, but to allow counties the flexibility to add additional programs where there's need. Delegates recommended adding permissive language to the bill to reflect that. While all five members of the subcommittee voted to move the bill forward to the full committee on education, some Democrats still expressed concerns about the implementation of the older California and Massachusetts education standards included in the bill, including delegate Stephen Baldwin of Greenbrier County.
The standards that we have in place were developed with the input of our teachers and of education stakeholders here. And the real issue for me is continuity. High school seniors right now have been through 4 sets of standards. If we were to change again, that's just going to cause problems in the classroom, and that discontinuity, I think, would really affect a student's ability to learn, much less a teacher's ability to teach.
Baldwin, who is a former member of the Greenbrier County School Board, also says he feels the fight over standards is more about curriculum.
Curriculum is where counties and teachers have the flexibility to make decisions about how they teach what they teach. And standards just set a standard for what students ought to learn. So I think those standards for what students ought to learn should be statewide standards, and then teachers and counties should have flexibility through their curriculum to figure out what's best for them about how to learn that.
Delegate Upson, who's a sponsor of House Bill 2443, says teachers in her county want more flexibility when it comes to standards.
Anytime that you give the state more control, and so you push that down to the local level and you give counties the option to kind of decide what standards and assessments best meet the students that they serve. Now, I know that because of the Every Student Succeeds Act, we have to have a uniform assessment, but I have gotten feedback from teachers in the Eastern Panhandle that we mandate too much from in Charleston, and so they would like to see a lot more flexibility and control at the local level.
House Bill 2443 has also been second referenced to House Finance, and Delegate Upson says the House will likely consider the Senate's version of the bill, which has already been approved by the chamber.
The House Education Subcommittee is also recommending lawmakers study the ability for counties to make changes to their standards. Some Republican members of the subcommittee believe counties should be able to address the economic needs in their area through education.
We look now at senators and delegates from North Central West Virginia in this edition of Meet Your Lawmakers.
Bob Beach is a Democrat from Monongalia County. He was elected to represent the Senate's 13th District in 2010. Beach previously was appointed to the West Virginia House of Delegates in 1998 and then elected to the chamber in 2000, serving until his election to the Senate. William Hartman represents the 43rd House of Delegates District. From Randolph County, Hartman is a Democrat and was elected to his seat in 2002. He is a retired member of the West Virginia Army National Guard. Phil Eisner is a first-term member of the House of Delegates. A Democrat, he represents the 43rd House District. Eisner is from Randolph County, where he works as a defense attorney.
West Virginia decided to get serious about recycling 20 years ago. That's when lawmakers passed a bill to cut the amount of trash sent to the state's landfills in half by 2010. Glennis Board found out West Virginia never did hit that mark or anything close. And lawmakers have done little since to encourage citizens to reduce the amount of trash they're creating. She has this report about the state of recycling in West Virginia.
Scott Ludoff owns and operates Scrappy Pappy's Recycling in the city he grew up in, Wheeling. He accepts a long list of items at his single-stream recycling facility.
So we get rid of probably 30,000 pounds of all your cardboard and plastics in that. All the other stuff within that week is all your glass, your metals, other materials. But that equals 50,000 pounds a week we do.
Residents of Wheeling have been sending about 1,000 tons of waste to landfills every month for more than a decade. Recycling hasn't really picked up as a social norm in the city of about 28,000 people. Ludoff wants to change the status quo.
So this is great to teach our children that not everything needs to be thrown away. We can recycle probably safely 80 to 85% of what gets thrown in the landfill. So we want to try to challenge ourselves and make the future better and make it brighter. So it's all about them. It goes into paper. There you go. See? We could have fun like this all day.
He hand separates, bales, and sells the various materials, paper, plastics, cardboard, metals, to local companies interested in reusing them. But it's hard for a small business to play the commodities game and make money because prices fluctuate based on global trends.
We did 1 million pounds of recycling last year, so we're looking at doing 2 million this year. We're here to make a difference and to change our whole city and hopefully our state.
Ludoff is also competing with the second largest waste management company in the U.S., Republic Services. Republic does not offer recycling in Wheeling. Big companies have very few, if any, financial incentives to divest from the much simpler business of landfilling.
Try to come here because it takes too much money and too much effort to start it again. Like I said, I would have never done this if I went from zero to now, but we've done it for years and I can do a lot more, and the more I realize that I can do it and the city is behind me, there's nothing we can't do.
Ludoff started his recycling business about 5 years ago. In the region of about 40,000, he sees about 50 residents a day dropping off their own recycling. But Ludoff says with more community buy-in, he could build a facility that employs dozens. His ultimate dream is to go a step further and manufacture products from the recycled materials he collects. Kind of sounds like a pipe dream, right? Well, communities in the Eastern Panhandle have already accomplished something pretty similar. In 1989, West Virginia lawmakers passed a bill that's goal was to reduce residential waste going to landfills by 50% by 2010. The bill was necessary to meet federal requirements. According to data collected by the state over the years, West Virginia hasn't yet made any progress toward that goal. But there are a few communities in the state that are serious about recycling, including Berkeley County.
My name's Clint Hogben. I'm chairman of the Berkeley County Solid Waste Authority. Okay. We have a recycling program that started in 1995 and has grown appreciably since that time.
Berkeley County recycles a wide spectrum of commodities, from glass and electronics to paper, plastic, and metals to yard and food waste.
We have almost an individual market for each one of those items. So I can't name one company or even two or three companies that gets it all.
Berkeley County's Solid Waste Authority also partners with a local residential waste hauler, Apple Valley Waste. That allows for curbside services for the public. John Decker is the managing partner of Apple Valley.
Generally, it is not an extremely profitable venture, but there is a cost avoidance when it comes to landfills. You know, when you look at landfills, they will likely be an intricate part of the solid waste circle for a long time. But what we want to try to do is move them to the back of the line instead of the front of the line. So instead of the material finding a landfill first, after being processed, recycled, et cetera, that it finds the landfill last, the residuals, what's left over. And so that's our goal.
And like Scott Ludoff's dream of taking recycling a step further toward repurposing, folks in Berkeley County have made that a reality. They're achieving the goal by investing in a company called Ensorga.
So it's kind of the next step. So after you recycle, you have what's left over, right, that was not recycled by the homeowner or separated at the curb. So you have what we would call today as MSW. And that material has traditionally only been able to be landfilled or incinerated. And what Ensorga presents is an opportunity to do something further and reduce that volume even more before it ends up in a landfill. So the Ensorga process is a very simple, that's one of the things that attracted us to it. It's a very simple, very environmentally friendly process. We basically, in the process, will just dry the waste, and it's done so with just forced air. No heat, no combustion, no hot air, just forced air. The heat element that helps with the drying comes from the actual decomposition of the waste itself. So much like you may see a compost pile or a manure pile steaming in the winter, it's the same sort of process that helps with the Ensorga process. And once the material is dried, it's then sorted for some recyclables, metals will be pulled out, aluminum will be pulled out. And the remaining material is a very dry, almost confetti-like material that happens to be a great product to use either in concert as a substitute for coal. So it's pretty exciting stuff. And through all of that, we will again reduce the amount of material that's being landfilled to down to probably maybe 20%. So we will have hopefully an 80% diversion rate here in the Panhandle in the very near future.
We all think about tomorrow and the impact we're having today, and landfills don't last forever. But along the way, you're doing some other good things. You're creating jobs. Managing your waste stream through recycling generally creates 6 times more jobs than if you just landfill the material. In some cases, more than 6 times.
Hogben says once you crunch all of the numbers, it really costs about the same to recycle as it does to landfill.
So we're competitive in the short term, and it's the right thing to do, and we're very competitive in the long term when you look at, you know, the environmental cost of landfill remediation that you don't have with when you recycle something.
Hogben says it took a lot of local political support to face the continuous legal battles with landfill companies over the years to get Berkeley County to where it is today. He says ultimately it's the will of the community that makes recycling possible. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.
We return to the State House now, where we meet 3 more members of the 83rd West Virginia Legislature in this edition of Meet Your Lawmakers.
Roman Prezioso represents the state's 13th senatorial district from Marion County. A Democrat, Prezioso was elected to the West Virginia Senate in 1996. He previously served as a member of the House of Delegates. Senator Prezioso serves as the chamber's minority leader. Dana Lynch was elected to the House of Delegates in 2012. A Democrat, he represents the 44th House District from Webster County. Delegate Lynch served in the U.S. Army for 28 years. Bill Hamilton represents the state's 45th House of Delegates District from Upshur County. He was elected in 2002. A Republican, Hamilton is from Upshur County and serves as the Natural Resources Chair of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. He spent 26 years as a Division of Natural Resources Hunter Safety Instructor.
Tomorrow on our program, members of the House are moving forward with a bill to expand broadband internet access in the state. And the governor says he supports it. We speak with two interested parties who are backing the legislation, Natalie Roper with Generation West Virginia and Gaylene Miller with the West Virginia AARP. Join us to talk about why broadband access is important for West Virginians of all ages. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.